a little spark plug to get us started. So there we go. Three questions immediately disintegrated. Fitness questions. Fuck off with fitness questions.
Okay.
We're going to start light, move medium, finish heavy.
I like it.
The hope is that as we continue to drink, you continue to loosen up. By the time we hit the heavy, you're then just telling it all.
Okay. Yeah. I like it. I like the strategy for you.
Telling it all. First question. We're just going to get right into it. Okay. Give the people what they want. If you had to fight one person in the octagon, who would it be?
Does that just mean like in a ring?
I think maybe it's Squid Games.
Oh. I mean, I guess initially you'd think about somebody you could beat, but that wouldn't be fun. So then you got to think about somebody who'd like totally give you a run for their money. Maybe like NeNe from The Real Housewives of Atlanta.
Oh my gosh. That's really daring.
She'd be good, wouldn't she?
Yeah.
She'd take me down.
I was just going to say.
But it would be fun.
I love you, but I couldn't bet on you.
Yeah. She'd be talking smack and probably saying things, and we probably would laugh, and then we'd probably become friends by the end.
That's true. Okay.
So NeNe, if you're ever up for like a good octagon or whatever you want to call it fight, I'm into it.
Fuck, kill, marry. Deathstroke Fitness, at Deathstroke Fitness, to be clear. Late Night Slice, Mikey's, or Howard Stern.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm a stan of Deathstroke Fitness. He's my latest obsession. And I know this is from Kim Vierhoff because she and I are both obsessed with him. He's like, what's up, Sugarfoot? it's all I call people now is Sugarfoot. And like when he can speak to people with like 10 cuss words in one sentence and get away with it, I am so here for that guy. So I am trying desperately to get him on a remote show. I definitely would F Deathstroke. I mean, Howard Stern's like a father figure to me. And I love him so much. He and I have a really close relationship in here. But my God, is he a high maintenance, neurotic diva? Howard Stern is, he would be like to be married to him. And he says it like he's just, I mean, it's, yeah, I couldn't be married to him because I'd kill him.
Aww.
Then I'd have to call in a card to have somebody help me bury the body. It would just get ugly.
So you're just going to go straight to killing him.
But then Mikey, as much as I love Mikey, he would be like an ADD situation to be married to. You know what? Howard's gonna probably die
sooner,
so I'll just marry Howard.
Okay.
And then I have to kill Mikey though.
I mean, you know,
Mikey, I love you, I really do.
You've got to make some tough
decisions.
I don't
want to kill you. That was a really tough call.
Guilty pleasure that you consistently look forward to. Examples: this person's very thorough. Trash TV, lol.
Absolutely. So Vanderpump Rules, The Real Housewives. So every night around 7:30, my son and I lay in my bed after we put Kyle down and we chill together, and I'll usually watch something or I'll work. That's a significant guilty pleasure. Honestly, stealing away for exercise right now is a guilty pleasure too, like on the weekends, because everything's so busy. So if I get to go for a walk or a run with Mac, I'm like, oh, this is like so good.
I'm just still caught up. Your son watches Bravo with you?
Well, no, he'll do like Candy Crush or he'll watch his iPad or something like
that. Wow, how do you do
Toy Story 4 on or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed the newborn phase when they would watch Bravo.
No.
Because, you know, okay. I was going to say that's another level of parenting that I would love the pro tips on. What's your dream job?
I think I'm doing it.
Ooh.
Just in terms of, in general, being able to do your own thing and love doing something and feel passionate about something. I've been doing some iteration of a dream job for, you know, 13 years now. I mean, starting SOS and doing all that, that's a like an amazing thing to be able to do.
Absolutely.
And anyone out there who's started something on their own, you know, it's a dream.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. It will definitely be a dream once Deathstroke Fitness is on here.
But are we, yes.
Yeah.
Now, but are we talking like in my head, unattainable, never going to happen dream job? Because that would be like a hip hop dancer. Wouldn't that be amazing to be like a musician or a dancer or something like that would be a cool dream job. But if you're just talking like regular life.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather be rich than famous.
You know, a stripper.
You want to be a stripper?
I don't want to be a stripper.
Okay.
And not in real life. But like, you know, I've always really admired someone who can work that pole.
Yeah. It's
amazing.
Art. Yeah.
I never had
a lot of
booty
body strength.
I never had the body for it. But you know, like somewhere in there, could I, you know, work the pole?
Yeah. Okay. Something you could do
there
if you didn't get in trouble. It kind of all comes together.
We just took that answer to all the different corners.
This is really thorough and dynamic.
Okay, next.
What hobbies or things you do in your free time that you enjoy, not fitness related? We talked about Bravo. Is there anything you like doing with the fam or your friends?
I hate to admit this. I work. And it's a, I love to work.
Cool, cool.
And I saw something recently, and I can't remember who it was. It might have been Cody Sanchez. She's one of my favorite people that I follow on Instagram. I don't know if it was her or not, but somebody was saying, like, it's a, when people are like, oh, you work too much or you work whatever. Like, if you really enjoy doing the work you're doing, it's okay to work all the time. That's what I really want to do. If I'm not with my family, mm-hmm. I like to go out to dinner with friends. I really enjoy that, but I like working.
And what are you doing when you're working?
So for example, when I go to bed with Dane and I'm watching TV, so I am either reaching out to people who I want to have on the show, or I'm working on some kind of creative thing. I'm always in the throes of something.
Cool.
So it depends on the time.
And you edit your own podcast?
Right now I do, but I'm getting help now.
Cool.
Which is really exciting.
Cool.
I'm actually training a couple people because I need it done a certain type of way.
Yep.
And then for these other shows that we're doing,
yep.
it needs to be done a certain type of way.
But do a lot of people know about the other things you're doing?
No.
Do you want to tell them?
Because I barely know about them.
But you're doing them.
Yeah. But I mean, I think there's a lot to editing.
Yeah.
And there's it can be very lazy, especially when you're not invested in what you're editing. So I just have my own way of doing it. So I'm just kind of training some people. So I'm not spending a ton of time editing, but yet the stage is set for how you want it to go down.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Now we're getting into Medium, just so you know. We're like starting to pick up the pace a little bit. So those questions were cute, but now we're going to get into it. How did you navigate the fear of starting something new when everyone has this perception of I'm too old to do that or I've never done that before?
I've always been pretty bullish. Everybody's scared. Everybody has fear. It's nature's design. But it's never, I have a very confident core. I believe in myself. And I think always, you know, what I want to look back and be like, why didn't I do that? And I always say, why not me? Mm. So it's, we look at other people in this light where it's like, oh, everybody's so lovely. And because you're looking at them from 10,000 feet, you're looking like an airplane, right? Everything looks so beautiful down there because you don't see the warts and the moles and the struggle. But we're all in the midst of the warts, the moles, and the struggle, right? So why not me? But you're the only person that's going to do it for you. And if you can't be that person for yourself, you've got to take a look in the mirror and be like, why? Why? So there's this little exercise. Mm-hmm. While we're here, let's just take a little part. I did a speech or a talk, whatever, at this girls' school. And they were all juniors and seniors. And so I opened it up with a visualization tool that helps me. And I do this sometimes. I'll just literally think about this. So speaking of being in the octagon fighting.
Yep, yep.
So put yourself in the octagon and you're fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Whatever it is. Whatever that thing is for you, whether it's lacrosse, boxing, you're in the fight of your life. You're grinding and it's all on the line, heart pounding. This is it for you. Okay? You there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then you look over in the stands in your section. Who's there? Who's there? Do you see them?
Yeah, yeah, of course.
Okay. Are you one of the faces?
It's so crazy, not at all.
So that's the thing. So no matter how much I love and respect my family, my friends, my mentors, and I do. If you're not that first face that's standing up like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Why? Because we're conditioned to care so much about what everybody else thinks and feels that we lose what we even think and feel.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? The 2 feet that walk out the door with you every day are yours. I don't care how much you love a parent or how much they love you or a child. You're the only person walking in this vessel. So that to me just seems so wonky. When does it matter what other people think and feel? The people that you care about, yes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm going to caveat.
Yep.
Does not matter what everyone thinks.
Probably the people in the stands.
The people who have earned.
Yep.
The people at your table. They do. It matters. And the people that you have a ripple effect on, yeah, it matters. But we just are conditioned to, like, And if you hear me talk, oh, she's so cocky or she's so that's arrogant. And I'm a woman. Oh, shit. Here we go. No, it's like I'm here for a short time on the earth and I'm walking in this person. Get it right. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's what you have to do. You have to. It's not arrogance. It's not cocky. It's just believing in yourself and the impact and who you are as a person. I don't think it's that crazy.
But where do you think that came from in you? Like, how did you become that person?
So I will say I have a Wandel gene.
Okay.
So the Wandel is my dad's side. And then the Newtons are my mom's side. Okay. So, and of course, I genetically both of them. But the way that I walk through the world is very Wandel.
Interesting.
I feel like even the way my aches and pains, or when I look at the back of my dad and he's walking, I'm like, oh, that's the ass I never had. Like, the, you know, when they were making glutes, they forgot. Like, and he's like always lifting his shit up, right? I Brady, my husband, will literally look at me out of nowhere and go, you literally just looked like your dad, to the point where I think it freaks him out. I very much have a Wandel something inside of me.
Okay.
Part of what that is there's a march to your own drum. Mm. And it's very intuitive. My dad has it. My sister Caitlin has it. And I really have it too. I think that the others probably have an iteration of it, but where you can really see it, you know?
Yep.
I've always been like not a contrarian, but always just kind of been like, huh. Like, if I meet someone or if they're like, I'm like, what, why am I like, what, how have you earned the right to kind of like, I want to check your resume.
Interesting.
As opposed to
people pleasing.
Well, that, oh God, there's so much there. But what I'm saying about that is, instead of just defaulting to I'm less than, I kind of stand up for myself as a reflex and go, huh, I'm here, y'all. Like, what do you got to offer? And you're kind of like sniffing around. And then, you know, the mutual respect and all that. But I have it genetically, and I know that. Because at a very young age, some of the decisions I made, some of the ways that I walked through the world, even in high school, I look back on, I just have always been that way.
Yep.
But then also, it's a muscle you have to build. Why do I want to walk around second-guessing myself all the time and worrying about other people that don't give a shit about me?
So what did your dad or mom do as you were growing up that instilled that in you? I mean, obviously, some of it, I'm sure, is you mirroring things that you saw your dad doing. But then also, are you doing those things with Dane and Kyle eventually and all that when you're now a parent?
I think it's just a thing. It's just a way. You know, my dad's a force of nature. He's a force of nature in so many different ways. I don't know what my life would look like without him in it. Like, he just is this person who, without saying anything and just watching him walk through his world, it's like, oh my God, I can do that? You know, I can do that? And I think you know that as a mom. It's like, you can say so much to people, but they just watch. And so I, you know, just kind of watching.
The observation side of things and just seeing how your dad functions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Cool that it translated to girls, though.
Oh, yeah.
Because
to
your point, it's definitely different. I'm not like a trad wife, you know, feminist kind of girly personally. Yeah. But interesting that your dad's way translated to you and your sister.
Yeah. And so with Dane and Kyle, that's why it's really important to me to have something like this that I'm doing. Not only is it something you're doing on your own, but then are you making kind of a difference with people? Like, this is, I'm just getting started with this. Like, there's lots of layers, obviously, in my head that this will have. But I want Dane and Kyle to be proud. And I want them to look at this and go, I can do anything I want. That would be my biggest gift that I could give them, is confidence and that belief in who they are.
Well, that is the perfect segue. What's the best parenting advice you have ever been given?
I mean, there's a lot of really good parenting advice, but I think what I see for myself is not having them until I was older. Mm. Just taking those little moments of frustration where you're just ready to pull your hair out and really pulling back and saying, you know, when I'm 80 years old and I would give anything, as hairy as this moment is, and as much as I am tested in this moment, it is so fleeting. And you're going to want it back so bad. Being older and already feeling those things, I get it really, really hard. And so I just think, you know, and it, like they say, there's gifts with everything. Like, you try so hard to have kids.
Yeah.
Would you have wanted to have them younger? Of course, more time. Are you kidding me? But there are gifts that come and have come with having these babies.
When you did.
Mm-hmm.
Did you always imagine yourself as a mom?
I did.
Okay.
But I always imagine myself in business. And I actually need, so I will, for this episode, I will pull out this photo that I have of myself, and it's at my, it's in my home office, and it's like, sits right next to me. It's like a guide. You know, you look at it and you're like, just remember, just remember. I was probably 5 or 6, and it was Christmas time, and there's this Christmas tree right behind me, and I am sitting in a desk that I'd asked for. I wanted a desk and a phone with fake papers. And I was literally having a work day in front of the Christmas tree. And that's just me. I mean, even when I was in, I was like 4th or 5th grade, and I had 2 stepsisters. Well, 3, but
yep.
2 that I played with. And we had this extra spare room in our house. And we had all these papers from my stepdad owned a grocery store. And for some reason, he had all these like different colored papers. And so I wanted 3 desks. So that the two stepsisters worked for me. And then I had a desk in the corner. I was never more happy and more safe. I remember feeling like when I was in that corner, like desk, pretending to work.
Your corner office?
Yes. In the spare bedroom in the 5th grade. I felt something that was so warm and safe. It was like I was meant to be there.
You're born to lead. That's cool. Where was that in the timeline of your dad's success and all of that?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that was way when I was really young. I was probably, I was doing that in like the 4th and 5th grade.
And your dad fell into his role when?
He probably at that point was still grinding it out like
okay, so,
at Johnson Controls, but okay. Was in like probably a mid-management level.
Okay. So yeah. It wasn't that he had already
It had
interesting.
It was just in me. It was just the way that I'm built.
Interesting.
Isn't that weird?
And I'm curious too, especially like obviously predating, you know, the internet virality mm-hmm. and TikTok and all these things that now like 10-year-olds are telling me they need hyaluronic acid for underneath yes. their eyes. So like where were you getting those influences or those ideas?
It was just in
inside
me.
Your soul.
And I remember having fake businesses. So there was like a jewelry business and we would put this blanket outside and I would like have this little jewelry bead business. I mean, I've always
been entrepreneurial.
That like that's always what I remember doing is playing business.
That
ever
is
since
so...
I've been 5 years old. It's very weird.
No, it's really cool.
But different. You know, like
yeah.
what like I didn't want a doll. I wanted like a fake phone.
It's just interesting to me, especially now as a mom, like the same commercials play for every kid. So this is just, I don't know what this psychological phenomenon is. If someone is, sound off in the comments, but if you know what I'm talking about. But like everyone watches the same commercials, oversimplifying. And for one kid to latch on to Spider-Man and another to latch on to, you know, Furbies, why? Like mm-hmm. I wonder what the psychology is behind it. Yeah. And for you to, at, you know, 5 years old, be like, I'd love a desk and a phone for Christmas, please. Like,
I think that's so where you definitely know there's something DNA.
Yeah.
There's something there. No one influenced me to do. I mean, even my dad's success, like that was when I was 5 years old, he was in the grind. Like he was young. So it was just always in me.
That's so crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you translating to parenting advice mm-hmm. or like advice that you've been given that has really influenced how
you
parent?
Well, so what I said in the beginning was basically like, let those hard moments,
yes.
like pull your fulcrum back and try to look bigger picture in those times where you're triggered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard
mm-hmm.
and it sounds so hokey, but damn, you know, like
yeah.
it really does like go like that. And I don't really know, like for me to give parenting advice when my kids are like 7 months old and 5, I am so worried, you know, I'm so worried myself
mm-hmm.
to not mess up and to do things, you know, so I really don't feel like I'm in the position to give advice on it, but I'll take all the advice I can get.
Yeah.
You know, the screen time, the social media pressures, you know, they have so much.
Yeah.
You know, the entitlement. There's so many things like that I work, that their mental health.
Yeah.
So I'll flip that one. I'll take all the advice I can get because
yeah.
I'm just out here.
You have a 5-year-old, you have a 7-month-old, you can speak to those things. But to your point, like
yeah,
I understand
yeah.
you can't give advice on
yeah.
raising a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair.
It's crazy.
Yeah, definitely. Juicy option. Have you ever had a guest come on your podcast that you regret and you have to say a name?
I mean, I couldn't name a name. Her name's Sammy. Her name is Sammy Moeller. Okay, that's good.
She's a real dud.
No, I did have one.
You don't want to say it. Mm-mm. Enjoy that. On the
on to the next one.
On to the next one now that you're a little toastier. Mm-hmm. Pivotal aha moment that you had when you had the courageous jump to jump from corporate life to entrepreneurship.
Pivotal aha moment.
Like at what point were you like...
Yeah, I remember. So I was actually... It's funny because when I was... Where I was at AT&T at the time, sales director, and my VP was leaving, and she had been... I was kind of apprenticing her. So there was a really good chance I could have gotten her job. And I was, I mean, if you would have asked me that 2 years before, like, oh, you're going to be the VP of the sales center. I mean, I would have been like, that's my life's goal. Oh my God. And then when I started working with Gretchen, my entrepreneurial flair, you know, that I've always had inside, and my love for fitness kind of all came up. But I'm not going to, you know, I hear people say this and about, you know, making this courageous jump. I mean, it wasn't a, you know, I was in a financial position that it wasn't like I jumped out of a 22-foot building. Mm-hmm. Okay. I probably jumped more out of like a 2-story house with a trampoline.
You like tumbled
so
out.
I'm not going to pretend like, that's, you know, cool. I was scraping for pennies. That being said, what was more scary for me than the financial repercussions was that corporate America climb that I was so naturally inclined for and was so much a part of who I was. So taking that identity and like throwing that at, that I had worked so hard for and thought that I had wanted more than anything in the world. So taking that identity and being like, fing, I'm going to go open a fitness studio on DeLashma in a garage. Whoa.
Was it ego like, oh, I'm leaving this like high-powered corporate job that I have that I've worked for to go open a studio in a garage?
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how to define it. If it was for me, I guess it felt more like identity, but maybe it was ego. Maybe it's like, oh, wow, like I have this. Well, also financial freedom too. Yep. So like I was always making six figures. Ever since I graduated, for the first year out of college, I made six figures. I was making so much money at the time for me because I got into the IT sales space.
Okay.
And so it was important for me to always be making my own money.
Yep.
And I always had that financial feeling of independence. Mm-hmm. I didn't have to depend. So leaving that salary with the 401k and all of that. That was a huge, like, oh my God, regardless, yep, that's a big deal. So then all of a sudden what? Like this thing fails, you're 2 years behind, and now what are you going to do? So I think it was more that, what I thought my life was going to be, and then all of a sudden it was like, I'm just going to do this.
So I'm curious too, with a sales mindset of that, like the highs and the lows, you have to be a certain type of brain. You have to be wired a certain type of way. I am convinced. Okay. You guys are masochists. You love like the highs, the lows, that chase. And knowing that's like the way that your brain works and processes. Did you ever going into starting your own business think like, what if nobody shows up? Or then like, what were those moments like when you were, you know, abundance and scarcity?
I think, yeah, I know that we had those moments, but I think they were few and far between.
That's cool.
Because we were doing this system of strength for the right reasons. We loved it. Everything about it, you know, like looking back on the garage and Gretchen and I and all the stories and the things we've been through together, we always knew we had a good thing in terms of a workout, but that we also had like the heart and soul and the community. So I don't think we spent a ton of time worrying too much about the other stuff because we were too busy doing the right things. I think people get, you know, you want to start something and then people kind of get caught up in sort of all that stuff, the minutia. If you like dig in and you're in the right space and you're doing you, you don't have a lot of time for all the other bullshit.
Yeah.
And so that's just kind of how I remember it.
That's really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. So was there a point where you were transitioning that you did like half and half, or were you just like, screw this, I am out? Like,
oh, no, I did. Okay. So for a long time, because I was the sales director at the time, I had a team in Columbus and Toledo. I would work from morning until, I mean, night. So I would do SOS like from 3 to whenever.
Wow.
But I didn't have kids.
Yeah, yeah.
So and that was also something where it's like, okay, if this kid thing isn't going to work out, thank God I've always been into business, because I wasn't going to, it's like, well, wait, what am I going to do now? Well, it's like, I can always do this. And I could do that with kids like I am today. But that, when you are someone like me, though, that doesn't have any distractions, look the fuck out.
You're unstoppable.
Well, it became a detriment, you know, because then other things suffer.
Interesting. Where were you in a relationship perspective at that time in your life?
We were married.
Oh.
Yeah, we were married. I've been married a long time, 18 years, something like that.
Wow, what a great transition for the next question. How have you navigated through difficult times in your marriage, and have you ever had to deal with trust being broken? If so, how did you do that?
Okay, so the marriage question. I'm very open about my marriage, and I would be...
You're not in an open marriage.
I'm not in an open marriage, but call me. I mean, you never know. Deathstroke Fitness. Shit, you never know what's going to happen. I'm very open from my... If it was just me...
Yeah, yeah.
There would be a lot of questions that I would answer.
Yep.
Obviously, there's another person involved. I don't think he's as excited about that.
Yep.
What I will say is that he and I went through some very hard times together. Very rough. I mean, picture this. You get married. It's all this pomp and circumstance. Dress. Wedding. Honeymoon in Hawaii. I mean, you're like, it's a fucking fairy tale. And then 3 months later, boom. You're holding your baby that's not on earth anymore. And then you struggle for how long, right? So infertility alone turns your shit upside down.
I can't even imagine.
Anyone listening who gets it, they're like, oh my God. I mean, it takes everything that is supposed to be what marriage is, the natural things, it takes it and just, okay, out the window. Mm-hmm. It becomes very scientific, very planned, contentious, because you handle things a different way. So he and I were dealt a very hard, challenging card. But even before that, mm-hmm. So backing up, I think the way that maybe he grew up and how I grew up, you know, we're all modeled a certain way. So what you see growing up as a relationship and what he might see, you know, you try to bring those two things together. It is hard.
Very hard.
And I don't care whether you're in a family where your parents were together or divorced or whatever. It is very challenging to bring two human beings together with all of their backgrounds and preconceived notions and egos, mm-hmm. and how my family does it or how your family or lack thereof. So you have that just regular marital stuff to balance. Then you layer on infertility. And that will... Our infertility journey was so long. It was years of trying, cracking the code. I mean, it was unbelievable. Like, I look back on the tenacity and the relentless pursuit, mm-hmm. and I'm like, holy shit. So we hit a breaking point when Dane was born for several reasons, and we separated for a year. He was not living in the house. And I seriously, like, sitting here to this day, sometimes I'm like, how did we figure it out? Mm-hmm. You know, by the grace of God, he made some changes that were very significant. I made some changes, rounding off my edges. I mean, I see how I was. You have to see how you are. And it's really hard to do, mm-hmm. because we all feel like we're great. And there were lots of things I did with him that weren't great. Mm-hmm. So, yes, we have had marital challenges. I also hesitate to give marriage advice because I'm not sitting here like, I'm on the top of the mountain with the flag.
Oh, yeah.
At all. I visualize it this way. We're all on this big, steep mountain. Think like real steep, mm-hmm. lots of rocks, real dangerous. We're all there in life. Mm-hmm. And some of us right now are literally hanging on to the side of the cliff by a finger. Mm-hmm. And some of us are at a break in the road and we're like looking around at the beautiful view, mm-hmm. right? But we're all on that mountain. And so like right now, Brady and I are, we are at a break and we're enjoying the view.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, he'll look at me and I'm like, can you believe we're here? I'm like, no, I'm proud of us. And you look at the kids, you're like, how is this possible that we're here? But, and I hate this, and Darcy and I have talked about this, Darcy Wyan, you know, when things are good like that, you're like, oh man.
Waiting for the other shoe to drop.
You know, you not necessarily in a way of, oh my God, something catastrophic is going to happen. But no matter what, all good things come to an end. Mm-hmm. And so I am just right now in this moment enjoying what we've built together, albeit messy as fuck. We did it.
It's, you know, literally so fucking awesome. Yeah. You deserve to be proud.
Yeah.
That's really, really cool. The timing is interesting. That happened right after Dane, that you guys separated, mm-hmm. after you finally got what you wanted all that time.
You know, it really is. It really is. But I think having a child.
Is that other, another challenge?
Having a child after you tried so hard and for so long and you're set in your ways. I mean, there were so many,
yep.
elements, I think, that played into that implosion. Mm-hmm. But you know what? And the reason why I want to talk about this story isn't to talk about my story. Mm-hmm. It's because I know there are people out there right now who are probably thinking they're too far gone. We've done too much. Or, oh, as long as you love the other person and you are willing to work hard and you're willing to see yourself from their perspective, anything's possible. You know, so if I can help somebody out there who's going through this, I'll put this shit out there. And then the other people that want to take it, you know, mm-hmm. for their little, you know, juicy gossip, they can sit with their tea, get your cream, your sugar out, baby. You know, I'm fine with that too. But I say these things because I sift through all that.
Yeah.
And I find that person who's like, that literally helped me beyond measure. And
to that's realize why, it's not too far gone.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And to realize, like, whatever you're going through, as long as you, you know, again, put the work in,
yep.
and you want it.
It's so interesting what's normalized and what's not, as far as like what people talk about. And now, and also as the layers of your life increase, no different. Earlier, we were like, you can only give parenting advice up to 5 years old.
Yeah.
You know, same. I can only give parenting advice to 2.5 and for 2 kids. I can't, yep. speak to what it's like to have 3. I can't speak to what it's like to have a 13-year-old, whatever. I have learned too that what I once understood on a principle level, I now understand on a personal level. So when I looked back, and there was women that I apologized to for my career once I became a mom, I was like, I am so sorry. Like, I owe you the biggest apology, because I did not realize how hard this is, or I didn't realize what an adjustment this is, or that when you said and you were trying to set a boundary, it wasn't because you were lazy. It was because you love your child, you know, mm-hmm. and you love your family. So it's interesting. Nobody knows until they're there. So people can have opinions about marriage. People can have an opinion about being a parent. People can have opinion about infertility or whatever. But until you've gone through it, you don't have a right, honestly, to have an opinion.
You're,
yeah,
right.
That's my personal opinion. And I think marriage is one of the things, and I have a husband similar to you that probably doesn't want to talk about things as much as I would openly. And not that we have, mm-hmm. bad things and have not had to deal with the heavy things that you had to deal with, but even just like, I think our biggest thing is he was raised one way and I was raised another, you know, like and not one is right and not one is wrong. We were just raised differently. And so even simple things like, I want to pay for our kids' college. He's like, they got to earn it. You know, simple things that make for two sides, you know, and all of a sudden, mm-hmm. you feel less like a team and more like you're,
adversarial.
You know, adversarial. Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting, let alone then you level up the complexity of the conversation. So I think it's really interesting. And I think there's a lot of strength in your story, because people are not brave to talk about, mm-hmm. marital things.
I think we should.
Because
people see your relationship. Everybody sees what's going on with things. Like, why not just be like, we're all on this mountain.
Yeah.
We're all together, yep. on this mountain. Why pretend
we never fight?
It's like, listen, if you're never fighting, that's a problem, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Yep.
Because you're either complacent or you're stonewalling. Like, that is not a sign of a healthy marriage to me, that you never fight. I like some passion and some grit. I'm just saying, being real about the collective experience and struggles. Now, do I think that everyone's had a struggle quite as severe as mine? No. But maybe some people have had a lot more going on behind closed doors,
yeah.
and they feel so like the, oh my God, like I'm putting up this front or whatever. Just the truth shall set you free. It's like the sun. You can hide it for a while, but it's always going to come out. Like ooh, it's cool. Always going to come out. I can't take credit for that. I think it was Elvis Presley or somebody.
It's like the sun. It's always going to come out. Carrie Croft.
I did that. Let's trademark that hashtag.
I do think even you saying like we were separated and we still made it work. Like that helps people mm-hmm. understand, because for me, I'm always asking my therapist, "What is this when people get divorced? Is that why yep. people get divorced?" And she's like, no, that's normal for you and your husband not to know if you guys should pay for your kids' college. You know what I mean? And yeah. nobody will tell you. And it's kind yep. of like guessing. Is this normal? Is this not? You know?
No, I will tell you there's value in separating.
Interesting.
It's extreme.
Yep.
And I'm not saying everybody go get separated. But if that's something, if you're in a situation where it's like, okay, you're having those thoughts and conversations, it's not necessarily doomsday. Mm-hmm. Separation can be a lot of clarity. So
it sounds like a healthy reset for you guys. It ended up being.
Listen, there are things about our relationship now. And do we still fight? We do, very differently and very less frequent. Hmm. Now, there are things I laugh about with myself where I'm like, oh, this is Carrie 2.0, because I can feel myself handling something with him so different, where it's like, Carrie, what are you, bro? Like, seriously, what are you doing, right? And so the new me has a different approach. And I'm not, like, you have to take ownership of that. We mm-hmm. all want to blame the other person. Don't you get tired of that? Blaming someone else for everything? Blame, 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 blame. You have control over what you do. So just take a look and, like, adjust. And you'll see. Now, he had to come, believe me, he made some serious changes. Yep. Now, had that not have happened, like, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
Yeah, of course.
But it takes two to tango.
Yep.
And the power in you just seeing things and adjusting yourself, kind of figuring out, oh, wow, that worked well. Let's make that a habit. Mm-hmm. So the way we handle each other is so much. I'm just proud of it.
As you should be. Yeah, that's awesome.
And that's it. I mean, I don't know what the future holds. Like, I'm not saying I'm the, you know, the grand dame of marriage. But right now is like.
Awesome.
We're doing it.
How did you take feedback to change, not in a defensive way?
Well, we did therapy. We did lots of therapy. And I do my own therapy. So mm-hmm. I have a great therapist in Grandview. I haven't gone to her recently, which should tell you something. I miss her, actually. I might have to make an appointment.
Seems like she's done a very beautiful job.
So I love therapy. I love sitting with someone who's not a yes man. Mm-hmm. You know, like, oh, yeah, you're great. I highly recommend that out there to all of you. A little self-reflection goes a long way. And then we had couples therapy with Jim. He's been on the show.
Yeah,
awesome.
Of course.
And we had actually another person. But it's helpful when you're in a situation where you feel like you're constantly going back and forth and getting nowhere. Just go to therapy. There's a stigma. Get over it. Why do we still have a stigma? I have no idea. Therapy is a smart move. Always. Mm-hmm. So go get therapy. Have somebody sit in the middle and sort of help you tease out what's going on. Because regardless of who it is in the room, neither one of you are 100% right. Because you're working on how to make the collective better.
100%.
So you have to acquiesce here and there. And you have to be self-reflective. And if you're not, if you're like, this person just isn't for me, okay, then go.
Yeah.
But you have to be willing to, like, compromise.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And to your point, I think recognizing that everybody has ways to improve, mm-hmm. even me.
I don't know about you.
Yes, I do.
Know, Sammy. I'm looking for something. I'm looking for a crack in the foundation here. I can't find one.
I have things I can work on for sure, including not caring about the wrong people.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, for sure. Two quick things to maybe not quick, but interesting things along the journey. Mm-hmm. What kept you going amidst all the infertility?
I'm relentless to a fault.
Interesting.
To a fault.
How do you have the courage to do and say what you want, even if you know you're going to get negative feedback? I really want to know how she has such thick skin and doesn't let the things that matter the most fall at the mercy of the things that matter the least.
It's a really good question. You know, I don't really have as thick of skin is I think somebody would, like, look at me and think I have thick skin.
I'm actually shocked just even listening right now. Do you say that?
Well, so I thought a lot about this question because you have said it to me a couple of times, and I know
I
that I
wrote this question. Okay. Wow, put me on blast.
There you go.
So that one was fine.
Well, and I have that persona. I was thinking about this because it's not that at all. It's not that I don't give a fuck. I give a lot of fucks, but I'm discerning. So let me explain. How do I explain this? So if you just mindlessly walk out the door in the morning and you just give, you just care about it, what everybody thinks, you may as well not even leave because you're going to lose. Mm-hmm. So if it's like this, what are they going to think? So I ask you, Sammy, who are they? Who are they?
I would say like periphery people.
Okay.
Or trolls at the worst.
Right. So you're never going to win with them.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that. Like anytime I walk into a room, you will have people who think I'm great and love me, people who are like, who the fuck is this cocky bitch? And people who are indifferent because they're doing their own thing. So you have to remember that. Like, you're not for everyone. Everyone's not for you.
But how are you okay with that? How do you learn to be okay with that?
Because how do you function if you're not?
With high anxiety.
Well, yeah. That's the thing. Let's go back to what I said before about kind of chest to chesting someone to say, what's your resume? So my time on this earth is limited. Like, time is the most valuable currency we have. Not money, not things, not it's time. So I'm going to give up time on whom again? They? Okay. Makes no sense. Now, what I will tell you is, going back to the ring, or maybe it's a table, whatever it is in your head, the people who sit close to your heart, that have a seat and an invitation in your heart and at your table, of course I care.
Mm-hmm.
My God, I probably spend more time caring, beating myself up, self-reflection. What should I have done? What should I have said? How did I affect them? That's where I say that I don't have thick skin. Because if you're just mindlessly walking through a door and you're like, I don't give a fuck. I think that that person underneath it all is very insecure and probably very wounded, has built a very big moat around themselves emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of reckless to me. When I say I don't care, I have made the decision and I have parsed out the masses knowing I'll never win. And then I look at those people who really matter, and I do my best to have good intent, to help improve the atmosphere, and to be a good whatever it is to them. Is it a spouse? Is it a sibling? Is it a friend? Am I always going to win and do that great? No. And you keep trying again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just very selective about where I choose to put that energy. Because
that's
cool. if you're not, man, what a miss. And I'm not saying, listen to me say that and all of a sudden, oh, great. But it's a muscle.
That you have to practice, that idea.
That you have to practice. Like, what do we do every single day? We look at ourselves in the mirror, we work out and go, oh, my tricep looks good, or my bicep is this. Or these are muscles you can't see.
Mm-hmm.
But that you have to build to say, like, am I seriously going to walk around caring what all these people think? Why? You're never going to win. And the more successful, here, this just in, Sammy.
Yeah, tell me.
The more successful you become, which you are a rising star.
Love you.
You there's no limit to where you're going. You're one of those special human beings. There's no limit to where you're going.
Really love this.
You're going to have more people who don't like that.
Yeah.
So you have to be, always remember, like, you know your intent. You know what you're putting out. You're confident with the person that you are, and you're checking yourself. That to me takes priority over all the theys.
I love that.
Because what the fuck are they doing? They're just sitting there talking. They're just talking. And a lot of people are looking for something to talk about to deflect from really what they have going on in their own life. I mean, it's true. You hear it all the time, but it's very, very true.
No, actually, that was a hot take. And that is true, the more I think about that.
Yeah, so you remember that. Remember that you know, I'd rather have a bunch of people talking about me and be doing what I'm doing than succumb to this weird internal pressure or fear of what they think.
That's so, this is all fascinating. And this, I mean, you're so fucking interesting. This was exactly why this whole thing started to begin with, because I had these questions for you as a mentor. I think my weakness, one of my weaknesses, is your strength. I am definitely more sensitive, I would say, probably even more than people realize, to what people think. And I'm a people pleaser, all those things. So that's why I reached out to you. And then you were telling me some great stuff. And I'm like, wait, we can't gatekeep these answers. Mm-hmm. And now to think about the little different areas of strength that you've shared through your story is really cool, because it's so much more than just this.
Yeah.
I'm Carrie Croft. I don't give a fuck. It's so much deeper.
I give lots of fucks.
Yeah. But I'm very the right careful. Ones.
Yeah.
And I love the idea of you saying that, like, time as a currency, mm-hmm. and that even you wasting your time thinking or caring or feeling down and, you know, whatever, affected by they's opinions, mm-hmm. is taking away from that time that you would spend either, you know, entrepreneurial or with your family or whatever it may be, you know, like, in joy and in a positive place. And I love the idea too, of that muscle that, you know, you shared, and just creating that habit and that repetition to really make it build and grow and become who you are. So you're brilliant, Carrie.
Oh yeah, that's exactly the word I'd use.
I would say brilliant about you.
Yeah, that's, never been a word to describe me, but I'll take it.
Oh, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. You got a brilliant. Desk at five. You're like, have employees at nine. I can't.
If you
saw
my GPA, honey, listen, I'm the most average. This is another point to take. I'm the most average human being you're ever going to meet. I was less than interested in college. Like, I have people skills, street smarts. I can read a room.
But that's
I can
valuable.
Make people believe in themselves, but I am average Joe. But that should be inspiring to somebody. Oh my God, I went to Yale and I have these esteemed nothing. Like, look at me. It's like average GPA. I worked at Roosters through college as a bartender. Fucking loved it. Would rather do that than go to school. Whatever.
But your emotional intelligence is off the charts.
Maybe.
Yeah. Which I think is even more important than IQ, in my opinion.
Yeah.
What's your biggest failure?
God, I fail all the time. My biggest failure in life? Mm-hmm. So I guess...
Or something that shook you up.
Well, probably my marriage. Mm. You know, that shook me up big time. And then not being able to have a family, I guess you could look at those as failure. But I don't really... Maybe this is part of what's good about my personality and my relentless spirit. It's like a failure to me is like just another way for me to keep going and get it right. So I don't sit and marinate in the failure at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, a failure is like, okay, like... It's like experimentation. This didn't work, so I got to go down this corridor. Or I have to, like, when you get stuck in the failure and you're like, oh, I suck and I'm failed. Ooh, that's never me. I'm constantly going to the next lily pad.
Like, that didn't work, moving on.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Figure out another unlock. I got to figure out how to get there. Like I said, relentless. When I die on my grave, you just put relentless, motherfucker. And again, like anything, can be a negative. If you don't
know how to taper it.
Understand.
But it sounds like you've worked on that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
What would you tell, let's think about two different people. Two women or two couples.
Yeah.
The one person who's like, we have done this infertility thing for too long. I have to let this dream go. And then somebody who's like, I'm not ready to let it go. Let's start with the person who's like, I've got to let this dream go.
I think only you know when it's time to let go. Mm-hmm. So for some people, it may be time to let go. If you've been trying and trying to no avail and you don't want to go other routes, like let's say you're someone who has struggled to have a child and you can't have your own child. If you're not willing to look at other options, whether it's adoption, sperm donor, egg donor, any of those mm-hmm. things, maybe it is time. I don't know. But you have to decide that. If you're miserable and you're like, this is the only way to go, or I'm done. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, sometimes it is time to let go. Mm-hmm. And when I say that I'm relentless to a fault, that's what I'm saying. Is like, for me, in my life, it's more you have to know when to let go.
Interesting.
Because I can sure hold on. So for that person, you just have to go with your gut. And if it's time to let go, you'll know.
But if you still feel something inside of you, and now we're switching to person two, what would you tell that person?
I would say there are other things you can do. Mm. If your goal is to be a parent, but you have to be really honest with yourself, right? Adoption, not for everyone. Mm-hmm. Egg, sperm donation, not for everyone.
Surrogate,
not for everyone. But have you even, those are sometimes switches that don't even come on.
Mm-hmm.
Until somebody sparks something in you or there's a reason, because it's just not what you normally think about.
Yep.
So if you are someone who just wants to be a parent and you just really haven't turned that switch on yet, there are so many options for you out there. And you, those are big options. Mm-hmm. You have to sit with those options. I would never say jump into anything. And I understand where people are with it when they really want a baby. Like, you just want a baby and all of your friends are having babies and they're decorating nurseries, mm-hmm. and they're thinking of names and they're picking out baby clothes. I mean, it's just a very incredible time for anybody. And so you sometimes can get blinded when you're not able to do that easily. You're trying to push, kind of push something through the hole. Adopting a child is like a really big deal. And it's an incredible process and like just unbelievable. But it's a big deal to make that decision. You know, getting an egg donor, getting a sperm donor, getting a surrogate. These are all things that take a lot of soul searching and time to process.
Yep.
So while I will say, back to your question, go down every avenue, sit in those avenues. Because those are children. Like, those are people. Like, right now, it's like this wish for you and this dream and this thing that you want really bad. But they are people that are going to grow up and be adults in the world. So just be very, very careful in those decision-making processes.
Okay, two questions left. I'm trying to decide which ones. We got a lot of questions. I knew that people wanted to know. Okay, here's a good one. For a lot of people, going through a hard time hardens them, but it seems like for you, going through hard times softened you. Why do you think that was? And did you make any conscious choices along the way that shaped the outcome of your experience?
Oh, God, absolutely. Absolutely, I did. I mean, that first really big blow about, 3 to 4 months after we were married, I got pregnant. And then we went to go find out the gender, and that's when we saw that the baby had no cerebellum. So she was missing a very big part of her brain. So there's kind of like life before Angel, like when we had that situation, it's like you're just like walking through life kind of dumb and like, oh, and then this happens and you're like, whoa, like this is like the human experience can get very, very, very painful. But I think whether it was Angel and then we went through the separation, then we had the stillborn with Hope. And then Jade, you know, the 2 weeks in the hospital with her, and then she lived 16 days. You know, that was like mind-blowingly raw, and just you just can't even imagine. But I think through each of those, I just remember, like, this isn't going to take me down. Like, there's a lesson here, and again, the relentless spirit, right? So, and I've told this kind of story before, but the most recent thing with Jade. There were so many moments where I was like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to lay here. I'm going to lay here, and I'm just going to keep laying. And it's real. This room is cozy and dark, and nobody misses me anyway, and I'm just going to stay here, you know? Mm-hmm. And I remember Brady coming upstairs. This is probably like the day after she passed away. He's like, let's go for a walk. And I'm like, he's on to me. So, and a walk for me, you know, because I had an emergency C-section. So just to, you know, paint that picture, lovely. In that moment, physically, emotionally, I had every reason to just kind of like, not give up forever, but like, just like give a six, let yourself just go to the bottom of the bottom. Like, go to the bottom of the fish tank, just lay there in the fucking rocks. Like, pick me up later.
Yep.
But I didn't. Like, I remember every day. Like, once I was able to walk, I just would walk, and it hurt really bad. More than I...
Probably, like, literally and figuratively.
Really, really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that my emotional pain was sort of, like, in my body, too, where I have... The pain that I felt in my body, it was really interesting. So I would walk a block, and then two, and then three. And I finally got to the cornfield over by the Ohio Stadium. And I just remember like lovingly whispering to myself, not in a beat me up kind of way, but in a very kind, loving way, like, keep moving, Kara, you can do it. You got this. Going back to the beginning of this conversation around who are you, when you look over in the stands, who's there?
Yeah.
So I was cheering myself on very quietly. And I'm like, if you can make it, like, so I'm on this path and there's like a crack up the way. And I was like, if you can make it to that crack, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
And so I made it to the crack and I walked back and I almost called my husband because that's how much pain I was in. It's a walk. I almost called him because I hurt so bad. It was like my body was like so heavy. And I finally made it home. And I just kind of took that every single day. But it's like when you hear that, I had really bad moments, mm-hmm. really hard moments. I still have moments, you know? Cry, kick, scream, take a day. It's okay to lay there for a day. But damn, don't lay there indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
You have to keep moving. You have to. And I mean, you don't have to, but like, what are the
other options?
What are the other options, right? And so for
you
me,
you choose your hard. You taught me that.
Yeah, you choose your hard. But then also, what really kicks me into gear is like, she can't, you know, Angel can't, Hope can't, Jade can't. So I must.
Yeah, what you've been through, I'll tell you what. Mm-mm. Talk about like the coolest story to round it out too.
Yeah.
Because how neat that in the moment of literally like ultimate darkness and your light was feeling so dim that Brady is the one who came in and like brought you the light that you needed. And no doubt he was in pain as well, but that you guys are partners and that is how you were to each other in that situation. Also cool that you're saying like on your walk back when mm-hmm. the weight was feeling too heavy, he was the person you wanted to call if you needed it and you knew he was your person there.
Yeah.
That is like, you want to talk about a powerful story. We're both like literally crying. Perfect. You want to talk about a powerful story and the proof of like your relentlessness in a beautiful way in all of the ways, like that you two found your way back to each other, that you two have this beautiful family, like you fought for every single thing and look how it paid off. And I know you see your relentlessness at 100, maybe as, you know, a weakness, but at that 75%, mm-hmm. like it is why mm-hmm. you are at this point of the journey and so much strength to share in your story. So in a lighter note, you're just fucking amazing.
Thank you. So are you. One more thing that did remind me of something that now that you mentioned Brady, the whole marriage thing,
mm-hmm.
the marriage thing is great and the wedding is awesome. Like I look back on the wedding, if I could redo that day, the Monique Lhuillier gown. Paired with the Target fur. Like I had,
obsessed.
I mean, I had the expensive and the cheap. So like it averaged it out. It was amazing. beautiful winter wedding, Hawaii, you know, it was just like a thing. And that should be a focus. And it's a beautiful time in your life. When you're picking your partner, it wouldn't hurt to go like Saving Private Ryan style and like picture yourself in a barrack.
Mm-hmm.
With your frickin' helmet and your machine gun and dirt and the enemy is firing and you're in this thing with this other human being and you look over and you see that person. It's like, that is that the person that I want covering my shit when I go running?
Yeah.
You know, so I'm not trying to like kill the dream. The wedding, the marriage, all that's amazing. But also think about that. Is that going to be that person? You know, I just, marriage and life, I mean, it's going to throw you
some curveballs.
So I will give that advice.
I think that's wonderful advice. Yeah. And I think you are equipped to share said
advice. I am very equipped to share that advice.
I would say that you are qualified.
Yes.
Last question. What is your goal for the podcast and where do you see yourself in 10 years?
Well.
All right. Last drink.
God, I just hope in the next 10 years I'm healthy and my family's happy and I am thriving in some kind of business that I'm passionate about. And I mean, what more can you ask for?
They got to stay tuned.
All she cares about is me drinking in a shot. That's it.
Shit, I'm trying to get this bottle.
Oh, here we go, girl. Here we go.
Now my hands are sweaty.
I want to hear how you close this show out.
Uh-huh.
I'm gonna critique you.
Okay, I'm gonna say, everyone, thank you so much. I hope your life is as changed as mine is. Truly, we had highs and we had lows. Don't forget where we started. All right, fuck, kill, marry, and look where we ended. You and I are crying, which I knew I would cry, but
yeah.
Wow, my
hey, that's life, baby. You snorkel along the bay, and then you go scuba diving in the. I mean, you just kind of go all around.
The facade of Carrie Croft has really been shattered. Everyone's thinking you're so hard, and you're out here starting to tear up. Hey. I'll get this open. You will have one last shot because you won't answer where the podcast is for the next 10 years, but everyone will watch and see.
Hey, if anybody else knows, call me and let me know because I have no idea.
It's only great. Thanks to come. You are amazing, Carrie.
Thank you. Back at you. Thanks for doing this, by the way.
People are going to love this.
I'm into it.